Hello and welcome to Accelerate. I am really excited to talk with my guest today. Joining me is Mary Lou Tyler. She's the founder and CEO of Strategic Pipeline and co-author of the classic sales book, Predictable Revenue, which she co-wrote with Aaron Ross. And she's a co-author of a brand new book called Predictable Prospecting, How to Radically Increase Your B2B Sales Pipeline. Mary Lou Tyler, welcome to Accelerate.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Pleasure. So take a minute, fill out that bare bones introduction I gave of yourself. Maybe tell us how you got your start in sales and how you ended up where you are today.
Well, the classic story is I'm an engineer by trade, and I was working for a very long time for firms in Silicon Valley who sold very disruptive technologies, usually telephony-based, trying to get asynchronous communications into synchronous communications, which you all enjoy now as digital.
Mm-hmm. So and, can you give us an example of who you worked for?
I worked for a little company called David Systems that took...
Oh, I remember David, yeah.
They had... Their claim to fame was to take the old AT&T key sets that were 25 pairs of cable. They weighed seemingly 50 pounds for a phone. It wasn't that heavy, but they had 25 pair cable going into the back of the phone, and they would take one pair of that cable and create an RS-232 Ethernet and digital voice channel over the one pair of wire. So we ended up, because we had buildings in Los Angeles that had asbestos,
right,
we were able to take an analog system and create a digital wonder world out of it.
Very cool. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about David. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was involved as a systems engineer because I kept getting pulled into the marketing sales area because I could discuss the needs of the clients and translate in for the programmers, even though I'm trained as an operating system programmer is what I did before at Xerox.
Mm-hmm.
So one day we came in and to the office, and we were told that the seasoned sales reps were no longer and the systems engineers were now sales reps. So that's
cool. I love it.
That's how I got into sales.
Bravo.
Yes.
So actually, I've done that for some clients in the past.
There you go.
Yeah, that same move.
Yeah. So I was faced with, as we talked before, I had no sales skills. I have sales process background because I'm a process expert. But I had no idea of how to apply my process knowledge to actually start conversations with people I didn't know at the time and try to get them to move forward with me through the sales process.
So how did you end up then teaming up with Aaron Ross to write Predictable Revenue?
Well, what happened was I really started getting interested in this whole thing about how do we start conversations with people we don't know. So I got very, very good at understanding how to use the telephone for that purpose. And I ended up having a large call centers in the Los Angeles area that we generated appointments for the healthcare industry and on an at-risk basis. So I got quite a reputation of knowing how to do that using the phone. So I was doing some consulting, and a firm up in Seattle contracted with me and said, hey, we heard about you with the telephony side of things. We want you to do this for this internet. And I sort of said, internet? Like, what do you mean?
or you said, oh, that's never going to last.
And they said, well, we want you to do what you do on the phone for our email. We want to figure out how to do that with email because we're thinking that that's going to be the next wave of communication for people we don't know to start conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So being a good consultant I am, I scoured the internet looking for somebody out there that knew anything about complex sales, emails, leveraging technology. And I found a guy by the name of Brian Carroll who wrote a book called Lead Generation for the Complex Sale.
Mm-hmm.
Right up my alley. He was having a webinar, and he had a guest, and his guest was Aaron Ross. When I heard Aaron talk about what he was working on with Salesforce, which at the time was a really dinky, tiny little company that we all thought Salesforce outsourced sales reps. That's mm-hmm. that was their branding for us. But when I heard him talk, I realized that, wow, this is sounding like what I need to do. So I chased that man around for a very long time to try to get him to talk to me about how he implemented that, how the phone fits in. And we ended up, long story short, collaborating and produced Predictable Revenue in 2011.
which has sort of become like a Bible of sorts for SaaS companies in the Valley.
You know, it's really been an eye-opener. But as you know, and as we talked about, the SaaS companies are really focused on fast transactions. So the ability to leverage people, process, and technology was paramount to them. So this process fit really nicely in with the way they sell.
All right, so let me ask you a question. Are the premises, I mean, here we are only 5 years on from when you wrote the book. Mm-hmm. Are the premises still valid?
There are some. The separation of roles, as we talked before, because the fact that the different sales roles do have different strengths and weaknesses depending on the person, that concept, I think, is brilliant and still applies. Maybe we blend a little bit of inbound and outbound, where in the book it was strictly outbound only, inbound only. Sometimes that's a little gray. But the
sure,
handoff,
based on the organization, right?
Right. But I think that's a very important concept. And also the concept of recognizing that there are stages in top of funnel. And even the Salesforce software isn't written for stages at top of funnel.
Right.
That's another concept that's invaluable, because the predictable revenue formula, which is on page 42 of that book, is the thesis for this new book that I wrote. And it's based on how to get predictability in the pipeline, which is looking at those stages. It's looking at the lag. It's looking at the ideal customer size. So the, you know, ideal account profiles are still valid. Things like that are still good to use in this day and age. But mm-hmm. then there are some other things that we glossed over, like it was an email-only engine that is definitely not, doesn't work for all companies.
Right.
The blending of the telephone is very important. There's also immersion and intraday calling, which is a call center methodology that I still use with clients who are not fearful of the phone.
So explain what you mean by the intraday calling.
What we do is when we're in a client and a prospect, we look at the people that are either direct or indirect influencers of our target. And intraday calling means we are calling in and around that bullseye to try to find the right person to start conversation. So you're actually making not one phone call to the person, but you're making multiple phone calls in and around, mapping in and around that particular targeted buyer.
Mm-hmm. In an effort to
establish contact, maybe verify that the person you think is the target is the right person. Because one of the things that makes me smile is when people say, we should know who the contacts are because we have all these tools. But there are so many different roles that do so many different things. I mean, I was working with a client that had 15 persona roles for marketing, a marketing person, because people do different things within marketing.
Right.
So we still use the phone to verify and validate that we found the right person. Some clients, we use this intraday calling technique, but you cannot be faint in heart in order to use the phone for that. And a lot of the newer clients and the newer companies, the SaaS companies, still rely on email way too heavily. So
and that's sort of a generational thing, though, right? I mean, I think so. We've got a generation of people that just didn't grow up spending all the time on the phone like we did as teenagers and college students. It's text-based communication.
Exactly. But not all companies are set up that way. And so we need to meet our targeted buyer where he's at and she's at in her head.
Right.
So having multiple ways of reaching them is a value. And the predictable revenue didn't really talk about that too much.
Okay. Well, so your new book, Predictable Prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitate asking the question, but it's why this topic? Because I think it's the number one topic for new sales books in the past 12 months. It seems like everybody's written a prospecting book.
Yeah.
So I find it sort of curious that on top of what we see happening in the Valley, where, there's this introduction of this predictable revenue model, which is heavy on the prospecting, almost as a reaction to it, it seems like there's more books being written about prospecting. Why is that? So many books are written about prospecting, and then talk about what motivated you to write yours and what's different initially about yours.
Okay. The why prospecting is that people are still finding it very difficult to engage. They're not getting the number of conversations that are quality in nature that they want. So they want to be able to master the art and the science of getting people to have a conversation, whether it's an initial conversation or it's a follow-up conversation because they filled out a form on your website. And so I still think prospecting and the fear factor of starting these conversations with people we don't know will always be a topic that people are interested in. Because once they get to know you and once you start building rapport, the mindset in your head is that, okay, it's easier to get them to do what I want them to do. But until you get them to that first conversation, you're navigating uncharted waters.
Is part of the issue that, the way that we specialize roles within the sales function, that we have sort of our least experienced, least qualified people always in that sort of front line, having those initial conversations?
You know, that could be one thing, and that's another, when we're talking about the book really didn't do a service there either. A lot of my newer clients, that role is more of a professional role, and it is someone who is more tenured.
And so what you're saying is the SDR role and some of the clients that you're dealing with, mm-hmm. it's less this entry-level,
correct,
we're going to burn them out in 12 to 18 months role through, you know, incessant focus on the metrics, to being a real sort of quality over quantity professional role.
Correct. And it is a role that people may choose to stay in. I have some clients that the SDR role has been filled by the same person for years and years. They don't have a desire to become an account executive or a field rep or an account manager.
So how do they manage them differently to not burn them out?
Because we're leveraging the technology now and the process in order to be able to serve up more quality conversations for them. They're not dialing for dollars like we used to do in the olden days.
Or even today.
Yeah. We're basically leveraging our ability to write good content, our ability to have the right assets at the right time for the right person in place, so that the SDR role is one of a consultant role, where they're taking that conversation further. They're helping them
before the handoff.
Yes, before the handoff.
So where does that handoff then take place now? Let's say on those clients you're talking about.
Well, we still are looking at qualification as the handoff point. How in depth the qualification is varies by client.
But qualification to buy or qualification to get a demo?
It depends on the client, but okay. Some are more involved. I mean, if you want, people hate the word BANT, but if...
Yeah, I believe that too. I sort of fall into that category.
But if you're thinking BANT, some clients are going to want authority and need, and then they're done. That's when it gets handed off. Some are going to want to have some understanding of whether there's money, whether they can find money, whether they can get money, whether, you know, money's not an option. They want mm-hmm. to know some relative level of where the money is. And some are concerned about timing. You know, okay. Is this something 6 months out? Is this something 3 months out? Because all that is factored into the pipeline formulas that we work on.
And do you see this as a potential trend? Because it seems like to me, when I look, you know, talk to SaaS companies, CEOs, sales leaders, SDRs themselves, mm-hmm. it seems like making that role more professional, having them extend a little further mm-hmm. into the selling process, sounds like the right route to follow. I mean, both for the buyer as well as for the seller, because then that first initial conversation, perhaps with the vendor, is more substantive.
Well, it's funny you say that, because when I was in my days of searching as a consultant for some method of doing this, I was the SDR as a consultant for my client up in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So I'm a highly paid professional who's doing that role. So most of my clients are like me. Now, I can't speak for the small to medium businesses or even SaaS companies, because my specialty is more upmarket. In the upmarket accounts, what we're talking about now is that role. There's a difference between the lower end guys. And I think some of that has to do with the way that predictable revenue laid out that map. It's not the right way. It's just a way. Right.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you think about it, cause I hadn't really thought about that before, is Yeah. So in that role, for instance, mm-hmm. could you make the case that you get what you pay for?
Yes.
so that if you continue to, right. I don't want to say bottom feed, but use it as an entry-level position as opposed to, you said, trying to professionalize it. Right. Yeah, you are going to be in the scenario where you churn through tons of names in order to dig up opportunities, and then you have a relatively modest close rate on a lot of those.
Right. And when we put process in, we're looking for a 40% close rate. And I think the average is 20% close rate.
20 to 23 in SaaS, yeah.
Right, there you go. So, by definition of the fact that we're targeting accounts instead of casting the wide net, getting minnows and whales, we are going after the whales. And we are training our SDRs as professionals who can take it to a point where the account executive is going to accept that opportunity 90, 95% of the time with no issue. Then we are talking a different type of person in that role. But they still need to have that habit.
Yes. They got to make calls.
They
or
have
outreach,
to have.
Right?
They're not going to be the, like I can only say when I was first getting into sales that the reps dressed impeccably. They wore Rolex watches. They had these beautiful suits, Italian shoes, that kind of rep where you're finessing the sale from opportunity to close. These guys may dress that part, but they are coming in. And I have a story about a friend who did this SDR role. She would put her coat on at 5:30 p.m. She would not leave the office until she got one more appointment.
Mm-hmm.
That is the kind of person I'm talking about. That's 22 more appointments a month.
A month, right. And this is, I don't know if you know Mark Hunter.
Yes, I'm actually going to interview him for my podcast in a couple weeks.
Oh, excellent. Well, yeah. He's got a system, he calls five after five. Make five calls after 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I love this idea is that part of the reason somebody that's professionalized in this role mm-hmm. is going to have less call reluctance is the greater right. conviction in the value that they can provide for the buyer.
Right.
And to me, that's always been that correlation. Call reluctance is based upon your anxiety and insecurity about the value you offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of discussion about that. There's a lot of discussion about compensation. And I think really when you look at the end of the day, you're going to want professionals in all those roles because starting conversations and because we are targeting. And I keep reminding people, these are the accounts that we want. We went through all this work to try to figure out what these accounts look like, who these people are. We want every single one of them because we're targeting them.
Right. So you call this an account. Ideal account profile, as opposed
right.
to ideal client profile.
Yes.
And you have a couple criteria. One is you talk about targeting accounts with the fastest velocity and the highest lifetime value. So let's start with the fastest velocity. So how are you judging that in advance when you're targeting companies?
Well, first of all, define
what the velocity is, just so people understand. But then how do you identify that they have it?
Well, there's a, first of all, velocity for us is lag, reduction of lag. So we, I'm sure if you've looked at or talked to clients and the water gets muddy when you're trying to ask them, well, how long did it take to go from this stage to this stage to this stage to this stage and finally get to close? The days in funnel is really that velocity. We want people to close quickly, which means when you go back to that BANT process, if we're hearing that the timing is out till initiatives for 2019 or 2018, they're not going to be accounts we want to take time with right now. We want to put them into a nurture sequence. So we're kind of like disqualification engines when we're mm-hmm. at the top of funnel mm-hmm. because
right.
we're only going to put through those people with whom we've heard all the right things. It's not even checking the boxes. We got the gist. And again, this is where a seasoned rep comes in. Through our questioning, through our listening, we got the gist of whether or not their behavior is such that they're going to want to go those next steps with us. So we're going to reduce the lag by virtue of the fact that we know pretty much that they're going to be going through the pipeline a lot quicker.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is...
I keep interrupting, but it's a trigger thought. So by pipeline, you mean not just the top of funnel pipeline, but the entire pipeline to close.
We take the entire pipeline, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I'm not an expert from opportunity to close, but we do take the math from the entire pipeline in order to determine that.
Okay.
We also, as part of the ideal account profile and prospect personas, have a 15-step sort of analysis that we go through to try to figure out who these accounts are, what they look like, and how we get more of them.
So that's yeah. a 15-step analysis on the account, not on the persona.
It can be both a people that we encounter through the pipeline and the account itself. Yes, both. And we do external and internal audits in order to kind of craft this ideal account profile.
Okay, so audits of?
We talk to everyone in the company who touches the customer or the prospect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I'm upmarket, so that's a lot of people. That's product marketing, that's product development, customer service, you know, support, blah, 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 blah. The list goes on. And then we also look at external factors, whether it's going to be industry information, surveys that we've done, NPS scores, net promoter scores for the industries, things mm-hmm. like that. We take all of that data, bring it all in, and then create an analysis of that, a qualitative and quantitative analysis to determine these are the right clients. These are the right accounts in this particular geography or this particular vertical, whatever it is, that we're going to now target for this outreach campaign for predictable prospecting.
Okay. So within that, then we talked about the ideal prospect persona, which you describe in the book, mm-hmm. The process for identifying that.
Right.
So you're, by definition, a lot of talk about consensual decision making these days and more stakeholders involved in the process. I heard today that CEB is upping their involvement factor from 5.2 people to 6.7 people. So how do you accommodate that, or do you even worry about that in yes. your development of the personas?
Yes, we worry about that. We worry about it from three stages of the pipeline: the cold stage, the working stage, and the qualifying stage. So we look at people in and around those stages. We don't worry about opportunity to close, which the CEB, I'm sure, is taking the entire pipeline into
yes.
account.
Yes.
So our little guys, we're looking at three maybe, you know, that are going to ebb and flow. And again, there's the target, there's the indirect, and there's a direct influencer. So we want to find those people who on average are going to give us the time of day to have an initial conversation and follow-up conversations to get them to opportunity.
And do you prioritize within that, you know, direct influencers over indirect influencers initially when people have to prioritize how they spend SDRs, how they spend their time?
Mm-hmm.
How are you advocating that they prioritize in terms of which of those three?
If we're doing an immersion intraday type calling, they're calling all three of those people on the same day. So within their block time, they're prioritized, which means they're only maybe talking to 20 accounts in a 2-hour block time.
Mm-hmm.
But because they have 5 days a week to do that, they can conceivably hit all of their accounts that they're going after in a week's time.
So this process you've laid out seems like sort of, ultimate personification of account-based sales development.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does, but it also works for, you know, I have a couple clients who are SaaS companies who are using the process, but I really am a stickler about multiple people in the account, because I think that's another issue, the difference between predictable revenue is that there was never really any talk about the people. It was more about the account. And then now we're talking about people within the account that can actually help you get in for that initial conversation or help you create the follow-up conversations that you need in order to start working towards that opportunity. The other thing that I love this topic about personas, because the salespeople roll their eyes when I start talking about personas.
I'm sure they do. I can hear it now.
And they say, our marketing department does that for us. And I say, no, they don't. Let's think about this. Begin at the end of mind. The marketing department is trying to get you a marketing qualified lead. You are trying to get to a sales qualified opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different types of end results. Therefore, their personas are great for a baseline starting point, but you sales have to build on that, because the pains that you're going to encounter along the way, plus the people you're going to encounter along the way, may be different.
One, I would extend that to what you also talk about in the book about how to craft the right message, mm-hmm. is that you're crafting a sales message, not a marketing message.
Exactly. So
which is something that people have a hard time distinguishing. Is
yes.
Yeah. You know, people think, well, if we perfectly align sales and marketing, then sales is never going to modify the marketing message. And it's like, oh, yeah, they're always going to.
No, and then
always going to happen.
We also have five levels of awareness we have to worry about, because marketing theoretically is looking at awareness of some sort because they filled out a form or some action was taken on behalf of the buyer. They're either aware that the vendor's there, or they're interested, or they're evaluating. But we have, three other levels we have to worry about, which is they're unaware because we may be reaching out to clients who've never heard of us. Mm-hmm. They may be, basically problem aware. It's like going to the fridge at night, you open it up, you're hungry, but you don't know what you want. We have that level too that we have to worry about. And then there's the other level of you go to the fridge, you see the chocolate cake, it looks great, but you don't really have an idea of who made the chocolate cake. So the fact that people
I'm not sure that would matter for most people.
This is true. Although for me, if it's a Duncan Hines chocolate cake, I'm very happy.
Yeah.
But, the basic difference here is that if I'm filling out a form on a website, chances are I'm going to know I'm filling a form on your website. So I know the vendor.
Right.
But if we're doing an outreach program to targeted accounts that we want to penetrate, they may not know us. So sales has got to own this prospect persona for sales. They have to, like you said, craft the message that involves more pain at different levels of awareness, which means by definition that those personas have to be done by sales.
So who within sales does those?
Well, in my world, it's my people, the director of sales, the director of sales ops, and the SDR teams and the AEs. We all work together on creating and crafting.
And do you have an outline of process for that in the book?
Yes, there is a process in the book. And for those people who bought the book, I actually did a PowerPoint presentation of showing a completed prospect persona that's graphically represented so they can see, including that bullseye that I was talking about the immersion calling, of how to fill that out.
Okay. Yeah. Use that in the past tense. I just want to tell the audience it's still available for purchase.
Yes,
just came out.
Sorry,
so
yes.
So those people who buy the book, make sure you buy the book.
Yes. Those people who buy the book and send, let me know that they did. I don't need a receipt, but just if they send a word to me through the website, then I will give them the keys to the kingdom of the swag URL that has all the different stuff in there that I'm creating.
Excellent. All right. One last point then on the book, and then we'll move to the last segment of the show, is you had mentioned that you sort of varying the methods of outreach beyond what you talked about in predictable revenue. So explain what you mean by that. What's in the cadence that you use?
Well, I think just the fact that we have sequences and we have cadences and we have different types of sequences and different types of cadences depending on the company and their level of comfort in using the phone. None of that existed in predictable revenue. So those are all part of, and there are actual samples in the book of the cadences that we use. We also have a lot about the tools that we're using now. We go very in-depth into this habit of the SDR because much of the success of a team depends on choosing the right person for the role that they're going to be working on. So we did a lot of work there as well.
Okay, excellent. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back for the last segment of the show with my guest, Mary Lou Tyler, right after this. Welcome back to Accelerate. I'm your host, Andy Paul. With me, my guest today, Mary Lou Tyler, we've spent most of the time talking about her brand new book, Predictable Prospecting, How to Radically Increase Your B2B Sales Pipeline. And so now we move to the last segment of the show where I've got some questions I ask all my guests. And the first one is a hypothetical scenario in which you, Mary Lou Tyler, this is probably like serving up a softball right across the plate for you, been hired as VP of sales by a company whose sales have stalled out, and the CEO and the board are anxious to get things turned around back on track. So what two things would you do your first week on the job that could have the biggest impact?
I would first get a status quo of where we're at, and so I would utilize my method of collecting data from the various people within the organization to find out where we are today. So from the standpoint of analytics, you know, what does today look like in this company? I would get a good handle on that. Then I would,
beyond just sales, everything.
Yeah, pretty much everything, because anywhere the prospect and client goes is where I want to focus my effort in understanding what status quo looks like.
Okay.
So that would be the first thing. And then the next thing I would do once I got the lay of the land and a status quo is I would then get an understanding of where we want to go. So predictively where we want to be and in how long we want to be there. And then the third thing I would look at is realistically, given our team as to, you know, what we have in place, can we get there? How do we get there? And what do we need to give up or add in order to get to that goal?
Okay. Great answer. Great answer. And you even got the word predictive in there too. So, all right. So the branding is consistent. I love that. All right. So now some just some rapid fire questions. You can give me one word answers if you want or elaborate. So the first one is when you, Mary Lou Tyler, are out selling your services, what's your most powerful sales attribute?
I'm pleasantly persistent.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Two, who's your sales role model?
Oh my gosh, been selling.
I mean, Neil Rackham.
Neil is like my, I love him.
Got it. Okay. besides your own books, what's one book every salesperson should read? Every sales professional should read?
Ooh. Well, I'm going to go back to this. There's two. Can I say two? There's Spin
Sure.
Selling and there's Right. Getting to Closed. Stephen Schiffman,
Getting to Closed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good choices. All right. So last question, perhaps the most difficult one for many guests is what music's on your playlist these days?
I'm stuck in the 80s, people. Def Leppard, Cheap Trick, Heart, Joan Jett.
Any AC/DC in there?
Just, I think one.
One. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, AC/DC has sort of been like the favorite so far out of the hundreds of interviews we've done.
Yeah, I'm definitely an 80s fan. My kids constantly tease me about that.
Ah, rolling their eyes, right? Okay, well, good. Well, Mary Lou, it's great to talk to you and great conversation. So tell folks how they can find out more about you and the book and get in contact with you.
Sure. The best way to get a hold of me is marylutyler.com is my website. The book actually is predictableprospecting.com. So those are two ways you can pop in and download a free chapter from the book to see if it's right for you. My Twitter handle is Mary Lou Tyler. My LinkedIn is Mary Lou Tyler. So pretty straightforward.
Mary Lou Tyler, and that's spelled M-A-R-Y-L-O-U, just in case people are wondering about Mary Lou. Mm-hmm. And thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for it. I enjoyed myself.
And remember, friends, make it a part of your day every day to deliberately learn something new to help you accelerate your success. And one easy way to do that is to make this podcast Accelerate part of your daily routine, whether you listen on your commute, in the gym, or make it part of your morning sales meeting. That way you won't miss any of my conversations with top business experts like my guest today, Mary Lou Tyler, who shared her expertise about how to accelerate the growth of your business. So thanks for joining me. Until next time, this is Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.